Hi there.
Hi there. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That's when everyone will be watching this and hearing this. That's crazy, man. 2022.
Yes, I know. We're recording this, just so everybody knows, on December 8th, 2021. And it's going to be crazy. In the past. It's going to be like past. Spring in the past, in the winter.
That's,
all those things.
That's very that significant. Sense? That's. I just can't believe how far we've come.
I know.
And it's so special, you know, over the years, how, not over the years, well, over the years.
A lot of work and a lot of years.
But over the last year and a half, more than that at this point, you know, it's just.
We've interviewed more than 50 people in the Jersey Boys family. Crazy. And it's surreal to us. And so we want to start off this new year and the old year with so much gratitude.
On a high note.
And
yeah. Exactly.
And a Frankie Falsetto. But you should know our names first, right?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I'm Devi.
And I'm Gia.
And this is Silhouettes JB
Podcast.
Hey!
Or Silhouettes JB Podcast, as we used to say a lot last
year. This is an early morning recording.
Yes. So we're very excited about this. So it is 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are here in New York City. But we are interviewing somebody in the UK, and this is our first time ever like branching out into the Jersey Boys UK world, and we're so excited to get so many new perspectives because we've had a lot of firsts on the podcast. But this is a season.
It's a season of firsts. Oh shit! Yeah. There we go.
Yeah,
we
totally go. Not pre-written.
All right, there it is.
I added that last night in our rundown. Yeah, so we've had multiple Tony Award winners and nominees on our show. And we even branched out to Gina Hutton, who was an actress in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yes.
Overseas.
Overseas. And so we got to learn how the Jersey Boys legacy has been like left, and it just continues to
grow and grow, exactly. And going and going and going.
Like the bunny on the Batty.
Exactly.
Yes.
And fill in the blank.
Exactly. And in the Zoom studio today, that is
the Zoom studio. I love that. Zoom studio. So today in the Zoom studio, hailing all the way from the UK, where he currently plays Barry Belson and covers Bob Crew in the West End production of Jersey Boys at the Trafalgar Theatre, we have Jacob McIntosh. There we go. Jacob is no stranger to this era of music, as he was also a swing in the UK production of the touring UK production of Beautiful, the Carole King musical. And he was also a swing in the UK touring cast of Kinky Boots, where he also covered Lola. And guys, look at his videos on his social media. He is insanely talented. He is insanely
so
amazing.
So limber. So jealous. Yes.
Vocals limber. Body is limber. It's just all. It was all great. It was all great.
Yes.
His vocal range reaches the heavens with ease, and we love listening to Jacob, and his charisma and his leadership on stage are so prevalent. We just love to watch him, and we can't wait to learn more about his life.
Yes, and he completed his training at the DMV Academy of the Performing Arts in Bromley. And over the years, he's performed in more shows, so including Seaweed and Hairspray at the Crewe Lyceum. He was in the ensemble and understudied Peter Pan in Peter Pan at the Stag Theater. He was dance captain. So Jacob, I'm a dancer, but let's talk about this too.
He understudied Wishy-Washy
in Aladdin at the Grove Theater, and he's in the ensemble in Sleeping Beauty at the Churchill Theater, and many, many more. And the coolest part is that he's only 28 years old.
Young man.
And I believe his birthday is in May. I think he's a Gemini, so we'll talk about that.
There we go. He was also in a children's show on the BBC called The Saturday Show when he was just a wee lad.
Yes, and we're so excited to have him on. He's such a wonderful person already, just from meeting him 5 minutes ago. And this is a really, really special episode. So please welcome Jacob McIntosh.
Woo! Here we go. Yay!
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So if you could tell our viewers and listeners, what time is it over there? Because they know it's like, it's an early morning recording here. So,
so it's 1:15 in the afternoon here. So for me, it's fine. It's really good.
Thank goodness.
The things we do for the pod. No, please. This is so special.
Yes, this is fun.
I think when we were interviewing Gina Hutton, who was in a non-Dodgers production in New Zealand, what they were like 18 out.
I forgot how many, but I know that we record at 10 p.m.
But it was on a completely, like, she was
a different day.
In a different day. She was in a different day. Gosh. At least we're in the same day.
Exactly.
No, either way, it's so great. And we're just so happy to meet you and hear all about what it's like at Jersey Boys UK, because we only really know what it's like from social media. And by the way, social media is rocking.
Social
on the
media
Jersey
is
Boys
rocking.
Isn't it? Yeah. Really good.
So we're here to hear your story and to celebrate you and talk about the differences between like the American Jersey Boys and the UK, because there's different dialogue differences and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, thank God Jersey Boys is back in the West End. So it opened in February 2008 at the Prince Edward Theater, and they actually switched theaters during their initial run in the West End to the Piccadilly Theater on March 15th, 2014, which was the same day that John Lloyd Young started his run as Frankie Valli over there. And now Jersey Boys is back on top, man. It's like they got New World Stages, West End at the Trafalgar, the UK tour, the US tour, the cruise, God knows what else is in the works. So it's like, that's talk about a legacy show, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's such a blessing. We're so happy that everything is up and running. And also just for our American listeners, so when we say Jersey Boys UK, so if you look on their Instagram and social media, that includes the West End production as well as the UK tour. So it's going to combine
Exactly. Both
of those things.
Exactly.
And oh my gosh, there's so much to get into. So we're all about the deep dive. So Jacob, when you were 2 years old, what did you do on January 14th, 1995? I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
You were already preparing your first solo.
Yep.
No,
I was, yeah.
I'm sure you were. just kidding. I'm sorry.
Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? You know, how did you catch the theater bug, the music bug? And just tell us a little bit about your upbringing and everything.
Yeah, so I grew up in a place called Oxted, in a place called Surrey, which is about 50 minutes from London. Do you know
it? Surrey. Yes. Well, from the movie The Holiday. Have you seen The Holiday?
Okay. Yeah. I think. Yeah, we'll take that. Yeah.
That's all I know. Oh, go ahead. Continue. Sorry.
So, yeah, a place called Oxted in Surrey, quite a small town. The funny thing is, quite a few people from Oxted have actually gone on to do shows in West End. So a few of my friends from school have actually been in Les Mis, Thriller, those kind of things. So actually, it's quite a small town, but we've all kind of done what we wanted to do, which is actually great. It's kind of a lot of countryside, which is weird. I moved to London, it was kind of very different, loads of city vibes. And school-wise, I went to a place called Oxted School. And in 2007, I saw Hairspray on the West End, and I was obsessed. Absolutely obsessed with it. And that's what kind of got me into performing, liking theatre. I saw Billy Elliot and was like, oh, do you know what? I could do that. I want to be on stage. I want to dance. I want to sing. And from that moment on, I kind of just knew that's what I wanted to do. So then I trained at a performing arts college and got an agent from that, and then started auditioning. And then here I am. Yes.
Did you take any private lessons before you went eventually to DNB?
Yes. So I did ballet, tap and jazz. And that kind of got me into knowing the basics, you know what I mean? So I didn't go into college kind of not knowing anything. That really helped. I had singing lessons when I was younger as well, which kind of definitely helped. Because I think singing is one of the things that you kind of, it's good to start from a young age, so that when you get to like a performing arts college, you have the foundation of knowing the basics and how to sing vibrato and all this kind of stuff. That definitely helped.
Did anything you learned in growing up in those private lessons conflict with what they eventually taught you at DNB? And did you have to do a lot of some unlearning?
Definitely. Do you know what? When I was younger, actually, I always used to get told to not sing, that my voice wasn't high. Everyone used to be like, oh, well, sing the lower baritone songs, because that's probably where your voice fits, sits comfortably. And I remember going into college and kind of being given high songs, that like tenor songs, and I kind of wasn't used to that. So I kind of had to train myself to think, I can hit those notes. So why am I like thinking that I can't do them? And kind of like reassure myself that singing high is kind of the same as singing low. You just have to kind of know where to place things. So that was definitely very different for me, because like I said, I grew up kind of singing low songs. And
I think because people put your voice in category at such an early age, but your voice isn't actually done settling until you're 30. I mean, and flash forward, you're singing G's on top,
literally,
at the end of Oh What a Night, and then like we're listening to you singing those beautiful, healthy B flats and B's and Kinky Boots, and I'm like, excuse me,
sir. True, Jacob, amazing, unbelievable. And I feel like that's a lot of adulthood, especially like with all of us in our 20s. Yeah, I'm 25, by the way. Denise 26. Yeah. And so we're all very much in the same boat, but we're constantly unlearning. And I think what's great about like younger generations is that they do get that foundation, but they also don't have any limiting beliefs at all, you know, with what people give to us. So I think the world is on the right track.
And I think that's, I think Bob Gaudio kind of provided that. I think, always tying it back to Jersey Boys, I think Bob Gaudio kind of provided that. And Bob Crewe kind of provided that unlimiting belief. Well, once I think Bob Crewe kind of got on board with what was going on. So do you, Jacob, think, you know, in your time having done the show, that those key characters like Crewe and Gaudio really provided that, hey, let's, there's a lot of different things that we can do here. Let's kind of like shoot it into the sky. Mm-hmm.
I do, and I think it's interesting because a lot of people hadn't heard voices like Frankie Valli. And I think that's what's different, is that, like I was saying about singing low songs and stuff, people kind of expect everyone to just sing at one level, and everyone's used to hearing low songs, maybe a bit of some higher notes here and there. But I think actually hearing Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons and hearing Frankie's high notes, you kind of, it's so different. And it's so, as soon as you hear it, you're like, oh, Frankie Valli. And you're kind of like, I think because it's so different to what you usually hear, it's so nice and refreshing. So I think, I guess it was a risk to kind of push him to the front and think, do you know what, you can do this, you can lead this. But I think also it's nice to have that kind of difference to what you usually would hear from a normal group at that time.
100%.
Yeah, well, that's how you make history and become a legacy.
Exactly.
So you were in a show called The Saturday Show when you were younger. How? So yes. Is it a talent show? Is it a singing show? And how old were you?
It is. So I was seven, I think, maybe seven, eight. So nice. It's a really weird concept, really weird concept. So they have, it was obviously every Saturday, hence the title. And so each week they had kind of like a, how do I describe it? Like you got a competition, and each week was a different artist. So there was like a Britney week, there was a Whitney week, there was, do you guys know? It was so, so strange, but also really, really cool to do. Do you guys know Westlife, the band?
No,
probably just over in the UK. But I entered to do the Westlife karaoke week. So they're just like, they're a band, and they've got some songs that I used to like. And being 7 years old, I obviously didn't think I'd ever hear back. I don't know how I ever, like, how it went through and how I got the audition through. But anyway, I got onto the show, turned up with my mum. She was like, you can do this. I'm a seven-year-old me, literally like going into a TV studio, like so frightened. And I basically sung, there were four of us. we sang one of the Westlife songs. I won that round. I was like, yes, yay! Amazing. Came back the week after for the final and came second. And I remember my face, I was like, oh, I didn't win.
No.
But then, then you kind of think, I'm 7 years old. Like, yeah. Everyone else is kind of like 10, 12. And there was just this, like, a 7 year old me just on stage, like, but yeah, that definitely, I got a lot of, what's the word? I kind of just felt like I'd achieved something.
Yeah, got a lot of confidence. Like,
yeah, the confidence definitely was boosted in that. Even though I didn't win, it was the taking part that counted. And it was really fun. Yeah, really good. So yeah, seven-year-old me singing on TV. It was fun.
Hashtag seven-year-old me singing on TV. We love a rhyme. Hashtag booked and blessed, sir.
Exactly.
Literally.
We love it. So did you grow up listening to the Four Seasons, doo-wop, rock and roll?
Do you know what? I was thinking about this the other day. My mum used to play the Four Seasons quite a lot. And at the time, obviously, I didn't know who they were until I got a bit older. But I can hear, like, I can hear Sherry, not just because I hear it every show, but I can hear it when I was younger. I can hear my mum playing Sherry and me being like, oh, this sounds really nice, like not really knowing much about it. And then full circle, here I am now in Joseph Boys, listening to Sherry every night and singing.
When we were talking to Ron, to Ron Melrose, he told us that when they were writing the show and they were putting the arrangements together, they were like, the world has sped up, you know, since between 1964 and 2004. So when you first came into, or I guess both when you first saw the show and when you first came into the audition room and you were hearing the music, what did listening to the music and listening to these faster paced versions, how did that make you feel? Like, what did that evoke?
I think excitement is actually is the kind of word that I think that comes to mind. I think when you hear songs that you hear the original and then you hear how it's changed to now, you kind of get that excitement. And I think so the Barry Belson speech that leads up to Sherry, it kind of really fits because you've got the fast paced speech, which then goes into a burst of Sherry and you're kind of like, oh yeah. I think burst. If it had been slower, it kind of would have been, you'd have the speech and then it would be a slower version of Sherry, which is kind of like, kind of contradicts, it's not how I would have seen it. And I think the fact that it is faster kind of gets you into the mood because you're like, oh, everyone's like, I know this song. And then they get really into it. But yeah, excitement, I think, is kind of the word I would use to explain how I felt.
And it also shows the excitement in Bob's belly that you could feel, like he was so excited about it. So I feel like that's, in a way, it was giving us more insight into how Bob was feeling, like getting ready for this to get pushed out.
I love that.
Did you see Jersey Boys before you auditioned?
I did, yes. I saw it with a friend at the Prince Edward. And it's so strange because there were some bits that I had remembered and some that I hadn't. So then when you get into a rehearsal room, you're like, oh, I remember this bit. And then it gets to the next scene and you're like, do you know what? I don't remember this. And it's so strange. One of the main things that I remember is Can't Take My Eyes Off You, obviously, because that's such an iconic part of the show. But weirdly, the scene in the car with the gunshot, I have no idea why that stuck out in my mind. But I remember getting to rehearsals and I was like, I know this bit. That's so strange. So strange. But yeah.
I love it. Well, so have you watched a lot of mafia movies?
Do you know what? No, not that many.
Maybe that's why it stuck out, because it might have been something you've never seen before and it's so jarring. For me, of course, like, so I grew up watching My Cousin Vinny. That was the first movie I watched. I grew up in Goodfellas, Casino, all of those were like part of my upbringing. So I'm like, oh, it's funny. I'm like, oh, that's, I would never think that the gunshot would what are you talking about? Too much violence. I'm like, there's no violence in this. Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, Goodfellas starts with a stabbing.
Exactly.
It starts with a stabbing.
In the trunk of a car.
Trunk of a car with a bullet in your head.
Exactly. That's the
Elijah
Goodfellas.
What was the, So you love the car scene. What were some of the other moments, if you remember when you first saw it, that stood out to you?
I definitely remember Boyfriend's Back, which is so random as well, because out of all the things, like I think now, because I love the song, I love the routine, I think it's great. But
those Jersey girls, I remember, man.
Literally, yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons, because it's a very male dominated show. Mm-hmm. To then when the females came on, I was like, oh, okay, this is nice. Like, it was a real contrast to kind of the rest of the show. And I definitely remember that.
A salute to the Jersey girls. Yes.
Yes. it's just nice. I think Can't Take was definitely one of the main things that I remembered, just because it's such an iconic song and you could feel the audience. I remember even when I went and watched it the first time, you could feel the audience really getting into it. And as soon as it starts, you're like, you see people next to you like, I know this song. And everyone starts getting into it. Mm-hmm. That's the main things that I remember from it.
How is Jersey Boys different than other shows that you've done?
I think the fact, do you know what? The main things that I remember when I watched the show and from rehearsals is the fact that you kind of get the story told to you. This is the difference between, obviously, Kinky Boots and Beautiful. Everything's kind of, you have the scenes, everyone's talking between themselves, the characters talk to each other. Whereas you get, it's the show starts, you've got Cesar Millan, and then you've got Tommy talking to the audience, telling you what has happened, what's happening. And I think that's the kind of, the difference is that you kind of feel invested in it. You feel like you're going on the journey with them and you're seeing everything being played out as the show goes on. So that's the main thing that I think is different. It's kind of, also there's a lot of words and storytelling in Jersey Boys, whereas in other shows that I've done, it's kind of, you have the dialogue, then you have a song, then you have the dialogue, you have a song. Whereas I think Jersey Boys is more, it sets a lot of things up. And then obviously when you get to Sherry, that's when you have the main song that everyone's kind of waiting for. So it's not like you've got a song and a bit of dialogue, but it's kind of very informative as the show goes on. That's the main thing, I think.
You're playing Barry Belson, right? You're not a swing. You are the Barry Belson track. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah. Who else? Who are your others?
So I do obviously Yannick and Cesar Millan. Play a detective. I play, what do we do? The Ohio cop in Act Two. I play Davis. So there's quite a few different things. And I think that's what's nice is that obviously you do the Barry Belson speech, but then also throughout the show you're playing those different people, which is, you don't usually get in other shows that I've done. It's kind of your one character and you stay with that for the whole show. So it's nice to kind of have your own little spin on, and this is a good thing, everyone's different. Both my understudies are completely different. They do things differently to how I do it. So it's your own interpretation of the characters that you're given, which I find really interesting, really fun.
The and others is in Jersey Boys, iconic, you know, just, obviously shows before Jersey Boys had done this kind of thing too, but I think Jersey Boys, Jersey Boys was just so revolutionized. It's revolutionized so many different things, but like the and others, it's such a small insignificant thing, but like having so many people play so many different parts, it's not easy.
No, and the others try, you guys set the scene. Like you set the tone and you bring the specificity to the show more than the main characters, for sure. Because even with the detectives, they already gave you up, numb nuts, you know, like all those.
Yeah.
Like,
slamming the book on the table, and you know, the drunk guy at the Strand while Frankie is singing, I Give You Nothing But Love. What's who got that I ain't? Right. Mate, you know,
it sets everything up, doesn't it?
And so on your Instagram story, you know, talking about all your tracks and all the things that you do in the show, we saw that, you know, because you know Santa Pimp comes on in at the end of Oh What a Night. He brings on the blunt and he passes it on and he does that. I'm not going to do it right now, but that high
it's early G, in the morning for you guys.
Yes, that high G in the end of Oh What a Night. And then, so this is kind of where things changed in the US. So when the show closed on Broadway and reopened off Broadway New World Stages, they fitted a lot of things. They put a lot of things together and they made some changes. So the Barry Belson track got fitted into the Joe Pesci track. And so now during, so the Joe Pesci track does come on for Oh What a Night at the end and does that riff at the end. But in the curtain call, in the, you know, the Oh What a Night reprise, mm-hmm. he's standing on the bridge with a horn. So, and they don't have anyone else singing that, but it's nice for you to be able to reprise mm-hmm. that beautiful, yes. beautiful riff that you just do so seamlessly.
It takes a lot of effort, I'm not gonna lie. It's I didn't even realize that he didn't, in the production, they don't do it at the end. I do remember in rehearsals when they said, oh, and then obviously at the end, you'll do the riff again. And I was like, oh, again? I thought we'd already done it once. What? But, and on two show days, that's four times in a day. So it's, but I do really enjoy it. And I've now been given a handheld mic. At first, I didn't have one. So it's really hard to compete over the top of everyone else. But now they've given me a handheld, so I kind of live my best life just going for it. And yeah.
When did they add the handheld?
About maybe a month and a half ago.
Okay.
I think it just got to a point where so I couldn't really hear myself, and all I could hear was other people, so it was difficult for like sound wise to balance it. But as soon as I got the handheld mic, I could actually hear myself, and yeah, it was much easier.
Do you, especially when you're doing that riff, when you're going into that G, which is in a completely different register, and going back down to that F, transitioning back down to that F, how do you traverse those two registers? Like, it's, I mean, during the whole show, but especially during that one specific part, how do you work on it? What kind of exercises do you do to really blur the lines between those two registers?
So for that riff, I don't actually know if I'm actually supposed to, but I do it all in one breath. So I I take a really, a bit of a quick breath, but also quite a deep breath before I do it. And I don't know if you've seen, or you haven't seen the actual scene when I do it, but with my hand, I kind of do like a, with this with my hand as I'm going up,
yeah,
and then as I'm coming down, my hand comes down. And for me, for some reason, I link the two together. So like I get to the top and then I come back down. So that's what I'm thinking about. I mean, there's times sometimes where I'm like, I'm actually not sure what's gonna come out because it's, I start off quite low and obviously it goes up high and then it comes back down. I think that's the hardest part for me is the coming back down because you've got to the top. And you're like, oh no, I've got to go back down. But it's just kind of like, I think now it's in my body. I think at first it was quite hard to kind of get used to it. But yeah, now it's.
Where is your passaggio, if you don't mind my asking? where's your passaggio? Your break, your vocal break.
Oh, so do you know what? It's really difficult with me. I don't actually like belting at all. Everything I find things so much easier in a mix or a falsetto, which is why this show is actually strangely really quite good for me because a lot of it is in falsetto or a mix. So you'll sometimes hear in the last riff that I do at the end, because it's so loud over the handheld, you'll hear me go like, and then it gets to a point and I'm like, and I flip it, obviously.
Flip into that mix, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, it actually sometimes depends on if it's a matinee, if it's an evening. Sometimes I can go straight up and it's like, yeah, it's done it. But it kind of, yeah, it kind of just depends on where we are show-wise and where we are.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
It's vocal choreography for you to come down.
Oh my God, like, it is. Yeah, it really is.
Absolutely. Like when, especially when Frankie has to do the splits, like the hardest part is going down to do that. You know, for you, it's going down for them.
Yeah. I mean, the Frankie splits as well. It's the getting back up. I'm like, just be stuck down there. Like.
For me, I actually, like, it, what looks the most difficult part to me is actually like, the microphone thing. Like when you have to like flip your leg over that. I still don't know how that's done. I need to figure that out.
Yeah, when they filmed that promo of your four guys on the roof, they all did that thing.
Yeah.
That was coordinated.
Fun touch.
Yeah.
and you were mentioning so your director changed it gave you the handheld mic a month and a half ago. Was that John Emmanuel?
So it actually wasn't. So a bit of context of John. So John joined where I went to college a year after I left, which is really sad. Okay. So I never got to work with him before I auditioned, but obviously knew of him. But John was one of the people who I think said, you should probably have a handheld at the end because competing against the rest of the cast with all their mics turned up, and then it's kind of difficult to like, to riff over the top of them. John, he's our director, who's actually moved on to Dear Evan Hansen at the moment.
Right, we read in his bio that he's the resident director over there.
So luckily we had him, so he set up the show with us, which was great. And the knowledge that he has of the show, because he's worked on it for so long, is great. It kind of,
he was an associate director in the West End for years, right?
Yes, so it was nice to work with him. And then, once we'd opened, he stayed with us for about a month and a half and then went on to Dear Evan Hansen again. So, it's great to work with him.
So that's amazing. And, you know, you're doing this iconic musical in the West End. Mm-hmm. I mean, so we know that the world knows the music of the Four Seasons. I mean, what's crazy is whenever they do a foreign language production of the show, the script is what get translated, but Bob and Frankie were like, we are not translating our lyrics because everyone knows our songs. And of course the themes are universal, family is everything. But if you think about the context, the family is everything, he's talking about cheating on his wife. So that's a crazy thing. But how do you feel the UK audiences, especially in this time around, and now that the show is back, how do you think they're reacting to such an East Coast USA centric story?
You know what, I think the main thing that I get from the audience watching the show is that the whole of the first half, they're kind of on the edge of their seat, leaning forward to get all the information, soaking up all the information, which I think is great because you kind of have to. The first half is kind of set up, or especially the first part of the first half, with all the information that you get, it kind of tells the story of how things are. So everyone has to kind of listen. So I think at the beginning of the show, I think they get a bit confused with Sesswarala. They're like, what's happening? What's going on? And then as it goes on, they're kind of like leaning in like, oh, so finding out all the information as to like how the songs came about. And then you can kind of see in act two, the change where they're kind of sitting back because they're like, so we know everything that's happened. Then they hear all the different songs in act two and we're like, oh, we know this one. So I think it's kind of a balance of listening in the first half and really getting into it and kind of understanding what's the plot and everything that's happening. And then when the second half comes around, they kind of ease into it and they're like, oh, do you know what? Yeah, I know all of this. I know these songs. And yeah, I think they really do take to it, but sometimes it takes a few moments for them to kind of listen and know exactly what's happening. I did a show watch a couple of weeks ago, and obviously I already know the show, but it was so nice to be able to watch it from out front and to be like, so I hear what I hear backstage, but I don't always see the staging. So the scenes that I'm not in, I don't ever get to see. So it was really nice to kind of listen and see and be like, oh, this all makes sense now. So I think that's from an audience perspective. And I think we're kind of a little reserved over here sometimes. So they're not sure whether they clap or whether they cheer. And then it gets to act two and they're all just like, oh, okay, we can.
Then they're on board fully.
And then and then a curtain call, they're all on their feet. I don't think there has ever been, I don't think there has ever been one performance that I've been to where the audience isn't just on their feet for curtain call, for curtain call. Yeah. So then everyone is already on their feet for the Oh What a Night reprise.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
he's seen the show 25 times. So
that's true.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So well, also and also in ways to make the show more accessible to a UK audience, because it is. I'm sure it is very difficult. Just really getting on board in the first, act. I can see it being hard if you're totally new to it. Rick Ellis and Marshall Rickman did change some lines to make it a little bit easier to understand, like the pure specific Jersey American jargon. So, and for any US fans who make a trip over to the UK to see the show, you'll notice these two differences.
Yeah.
So in Tommy's first, in Tommy's speeches, he always says, he talks about like Eisenhower, Rocky Marciano. He just lists those people to set the time period, but this gets a little bit more, they define it a little bit more. So we say Eisenhower was the president, Rocky Marciano is the heavyweight champ. Like you just need a little bit more they are and what they do. Thank you. The description. That's the word I was looking for. So that's very interesting.
But it's just like so simple. Like it just, Eisenhower is the president, Rocky Marciano is the heavyweight champ.
Yeah.
It still has that.
Same bounce.
It just making it a little bit more. And also there in the same opening, there is a part where Tommy says, some people don't like to go to drive on a turnpike next to a
landfill, next to a dump
to cheer for a team that's from New York anyway.
Did I mess that up?
I think I started messing it up, but it's very New Jersey, and then he says it's natural to want something better. So the change that's in the UK, he's like, we got some of the finest prisons in the country. I know from considerable personal experience. Right. It's only natural to want something better. You're from my neighborhood, you got three ways out. So those are some of the changes that make it a little bit more accessible because so. Yeah, I mean that's just the way it is, but I think that those changes were just so, Rick Ellis and Marshall Brickman, their written word is just so.
Exactly, it probably cooked that up in 2 seconds.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Different drafts.
So we'd like to
pivot.
Pivot a little bit. Exactly. I can't find the word. And we
hate using that word, but I think that's the only way to use it.
Pandemic pivot, right? We want to talk a little bit more about you.
So like with whatever you're open to talking about. But we were just like really just stalking your Instagram to get more of a feel for for how you became who you are. And we saw that you met your birth father for the first time in New York City in August 2018 on the red steps in Times Square, which is so special, and that's where so much magic happens. We'd love for you to share that story with us if you're open.
Of course, 100%. So I was adopted when I was 1 week old from Philadelphia. So it's crazy. So obviously I've lived in the UK since I was 1 week old, but my birth family all live in Philadelphia. And I've kind of always, growing up, always wanted to kind of get in contact or at some point meet them. And getting a long story short, I was out for a meal with a friend once, and he was like, have you ever looked for your family on Facebook? And I was like, no, I actually haven't really, never really thought to do it. Probably one of the easiest ways that you could do it, but I've just never thought about it. And he basically typed in my dad's name and found my dad within like a minute. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. And then started finding more of my family on. It was crazy. And I was just sitting there like eating my meal, like this is crazy. Then I got in contact with my dad. We had conversations for about a year and a bit. And one of my best friends, we were on a break from, was it Kinky? From Beautiful. I was about to start Kinky Boots. And she was like, I'm going to New York next week. Do you want to come? And I was like, oh, yeah, why not? Might as well. Messaged my dad saying I'm going to be in New York this time. And he was like, okay, amazing. And yeah, we casually met up in New York for the first time ever.
Wow.
It was one of those things where on WhatsApp, do you guys have WhatsApp? Do you use WhatsApp?
Yes.
We had like our live locations on. So mm-hmm. we kind of saw the two, me and my dad, like moving on my phone, like, and then oh I kind gosh. Of looked up. It was like a film. I looked up, saw my dad across the road and was like, this is like a film.
Wow.
And yeah, we just went for lunch and it was really nice to meet him. So strange, obviously, knowing that he's my dad. We've got completely different accents, had completely different like growing up like stages, and but yeah, it's really, really nice. Really
nice. So how do your friends and your family that have come see the show, especially the ones that are seeing it for the first time, what do they think?
Mm. Do you know what? A few of my friends from college went to see it last week before last, and some of them had never seen it. And the first thing they said was, it was so slick. They were like, everything is done so well. To even, and we had this in rehearsal, even picking up a chair, we have to pick it up in a specific way. And at the time in rehearsals, you kind of think, but why? Like, why? And then you see it. Like, do you know what I mean? And then you see it on stage and you think, that is why, because everything flows into the next scene. Everything is, the transitions are done so well. And I think that's one of the main things, is that shows can look messy, or if you've got one person that's doing something different to the rest of everyone, it kind of, your eye is drawn to them. Whereas I think with Jersey Boys, watching the show as an outsider, if you haven't seen it before, one of the main things that people always say is, oh, it just looks so slick. And like everything is timed so well. And I think that's one of the main things that I love about it, is that it's different because everything has been thought about, like I said, even to moving a chair, which it sounds funny, but it's actually just so clever and it just looks so, so, so great.
How fun is it to be in that rolling chair?
Yeah.
Being rolled into...
That's the funniest part for us.
That's the talk about slick. Listen.
Do you get scared?
I do. We actually had do we have two different chairs? So we tried out one of the chairs and it was not working. I can't remember as soon as you get pushed on, it pushes you back. So then as soon as the whole chair just goes over. So we got rid of that
the
one.
Friction.
It's awful because you're about to do a scene and you're like, the scene started and you're like on your back, look. But yes, not ideal. But I do actually, now I really enjoy it. I do quite like it. And the audience
always laughs. Look at me, I'm teared up. Yeah.
Exactly. And the audience don't expect it. And I think that's the best thing, is that you kind of just fly on and you're like, the scene started and everyone's kind of like, oh, wasn't expecting that.
Yep.
So yeah, it's nice.
The first time anyone rolls on, you don't even really notice it. I think when Lou the accountant comes on stage right in Act 2, I think that's the first time anyone kind of really rolls on. But then obviously they have you flying from stage left.
Yes, you're like, ooh.
Oh my god,
yeah. I love it.
It's fucking hysterical.
Yeah, like you can tell that's just having fun, and it shows like the frivolousness of people in that industry at the time.
That's really good. That's really, really good, actually.
Thank you.
Wow.
It does.
I love that.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like you can't. That's why we have to ask everybody. Like, was this intended? Am I looking into this too much? I don't know. Oh, but that's awesome. Okay. So we had Barry Belson. So with Swing Life, you're no stranger to Swing Life. You 13 tracks in Kinky Boots, multiple tracks in Beautiful. And we have so much love for swings. It's the hardest job in the industry,
me and Gia, not anymore, but we both were working in real estate. And so there was an actor. There was an actor in New York that we really helped him get an apartment, and he was a swing, and he's a swing in a show on Broadway right now. And we really had to help him get that apartment. And because people think of, you're a swing, you must not only be getting paid for when you're actually on, but really, I mean, you're getting paid whether you go on or not, you know?
Exactly.
So what, I guess how, are swings like received in the UK? Is it for here? It is like respected in the industry, but outside of it, no one really has an idea, or they just think that
when I grew
it's up, not, they think it's not a big deal.
When I grew up in community theater, swing, ensemble, chorus were like interchangeably in the cast. Yeah. And all, like, so I didn't really know what a swing was until a few years ago. So so just to reiterate her question. So like what is the culture of the swings in the UK?
I think as we move forward, it's getting much better over here. I think we've got on Twitter, there's a page called West End Understudies, which literally promotes all swings, covers, alternates, standbys. And people now check daily to see who's on in shows, which I think a couple of years ago, it was still a big thing, but now it's got much bigger. I think shows like Six, who have alternates now and super swings, have really pushed it now because people are now going to see the alternates. They're going to see the swing. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of people now, it's not like, obviously you've got the main cast who are obviously great, but then you've also got the alternates who are equally as great, really great. And the swings who are equal. Do you know what I mean? So it's, and I feel like when I got Beautiful the first time, some people were like, oh, so you're a swing. So does that mean that you weren't good enough to get the role? And in my head, I thought, I know it says, but it's people that didn't know the industry and thought, oh, so you're not on every show. Does that mean that you aren't able to do all 8 shows a week? And I had to explain to them and say, in the nicest possible way, usually swings have to know multiple roles, which means that they're more valuable to have because they're off stage. If anything happens to any of them, any of the main cast, then obviously they go on. So I think until you know that, you're kind of like, oh, okay, fair enough, it makes sense. And they really are the backbone of a show. We couldn't do Jersey Boys without the swings. Like the swings are, especially with Holiday, because when you're in London, you have 4 weeks holiday in the year. So if you're off on holiday, someone's got to cover your role. So yeah, we're really lucky that we've got 5 really great swings in Joe's Boys who know everything. Most of them have been on for most of the tracks, to be honest. So it's, they're just so valuable, really valuable.
And especially in the well, okay, so I'm not sure exactly. So in the US at New World Stages right now, the swings are actually pretty much on every show because they're on stage during Can't Take playing, one of them is on stage playing a horn. One of them is playing the saxophone during Short Shorts.
Short Shorts, yes, yeah.
So they're actually on, you could consider them on stage and off stage swings. But you mentioned super swing. What's a super swing?
So I think Six have come up with that term, the super swing. One of my best friends actually has just been cast in the West End production as a super swing. So it means, so you've got the alternates who I think cover 2 of the Queens and Six as their first covers, and then they've got second cover and third covers. Whereas the super swing I think covers all 6 queens.
Every single one. Okay.
That's what all 6 queens. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is,
it's great. Yeah.
See, that's such an honor. And thank you for using the word valuable. I think value is the key word. I mean, 6, literally, because like covering all 6 of them, that's all unbelievable. 6.
I know.
Wow. It's great. I feel like that just shows how versatile actors can be. And that's so beautiful. There was something else you said too. Oh, so in the UK, you get 4 weeks off?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So
Dude, that's beautiful.
So what is it in beautiful?
I believe. So 2 vacations.
Yeah. So we're not sure exactly what it's built, what's built into the contract. And there is a difference between Broadway and off Broadway too. I don't know. Is there a difference between West End and off West End in terms of the contracts?
I'm not too sure with West End and off West End, but definitely with touring, you would still have 4 weeks in the year, but you would all have it at the same time. So you would just, you wouldn't go to, you just have like a week off and wouldn't be at a venue that week. Whereas obviously in London, it plays for the whole year. And then each person gets 4 weeks off at a time, which actually kind of sometimes doesn't work. You can never have, so I couldn't be off at the same time as one of the high swings is, because that means you'd only have one high swing left in the building to cover Barry, Joey, Frankie, and Crew. So it's difficult. But yeah, we should get about 4 weeks each, which is quite cool. Quite nice.
So what's a high swing?
As in, so we've got the two, we call them the high swings, who cover Frankie, Joe Pesci, Barry, Bob Crew, and Bob Gaudio. And then we have the low swings who cover Nick, Tommy, Jip.
Oh, so like literally high voice, low voice.
High voice, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I see. So I have a question about tracking. You're Barry Belson, because we don't have a Barry Belson track anymore in the US. Do you have a Jip DiCarlo track? Like is it an older gentleman?
I mean, he's a little bit older than the rest of us, but he Mark Isherwood. So he did both contracts in London back in the day. I think he was a swing back in the day. So now, but he came back as Jip and covers Nick.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, because what they kind of fitted out was, because the person who plays Jip also needs to be able to play Nick in the US. Yes. So he is a little bit younger.
Okay, yeah, fair. We've got quite a young cast, but it all fits when the covers are on, everyone kind of looks the same kind of age. It's really
100%. It works. It totally works.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd love to transition into our final part of the interview, where we want to ask you some, you know, Bob Crew questions, since you had you played Bob Crew, and that was just one of the coolest things ever. And
so you were one of the first Black actors to play Bob Crew in the history of Jersey Boys Worldwide. So
we had Tommy Earl Jenkins,
yes,
who did it before, and now you are joining that legacy.
Yeah. So could you walk us through when you found out that you were going to go on for Bob Crew, and how it made you feel, and do you realize the impact that you have with that special performance that you did, really, especially here in the States too?
We're so happy for you, man.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it was, so I found out quite late into the rehearsal process that I was actually even covering Bob Crew. So I had signed a contract as Barry Belson, and that was kind of it. And I actually thought, this is the first show that I'm going to be doing that I haven't been understudied for anyone. And I kind of was like, oh, that's quite nice, because I haven't ever had my own role that's been mine, if that makes sense, and not had to cover someone else. And then we got to, I think, week one of tech, and the director said to me, how would you feel about covering Bob Crew? And I thought, well, I haven't been watching his track at all, because I've just been focusing on my own. So I said, listen, I would love to do it, but I kind of obviously need to be rehearsed in, because I don't really know his actual track. Fast forward to, I had cover run or put-ins as Bob Crew, and kind of, because I'm second cover, I wasn't sure if I'd ever go on. And it was a two-show day on a Thursday, and I think some people were ill, and we had, the second cover was on for Frankie for the matinee, and I was going to do just one show as Bob Crew for the matinee. However, then he ended up going on for Gaudio for the second show.
Oh.
So I got to do two shows as Bob Crew, which is great.
Wow. All right. Two.
I was like, so the first one, two show crew. I got the phone call in the morning saying, how do you feel about doing Bob Crew today? And I was like, sure, like,
yep,
I'll do it, sure, I'll do it.
Literally, I was like, I can't, what else can I say? Like, so that, yeah, I got through the first one. It was a massive blur. Like, yeah. I came off at the end and kind of was like, I got through it, perfect, like, I'm happy. And then the company manager said, are you okay to do the second show as well? And I was like, do you know what? I'm actually happier that you've asked that, because some of the things that maybe I didn't feel as confident in the first one, I could then rectify for the second one. Mm-hmm. And do you know what? I just had a lot of fun. I just really enjoyed it. It got to the end of the day, I was worn out. I was so tired, yeah, just from my brain on overload. And also for the both shows, we had to get someone, the cast was down due to illness. So we actually had to get someone who had done the show in town and on tour to come and do Barry. Oh, so wow. He was asking me questions at the same time as I was trying to go through the Bob Crew track. Oh, so it was, man, kind of, it was a very busy day, I'm not gonna lie. But it was so fun. And I did feel a little bit of pressure, just because I feel like sometimes people see online, oh, someone's on for this part. And I wanted to do it justice. I didn't want to go on and just be like average. Do you know what I mean? And just be like, mm-hmm, oh, whatever. But I kind of felt like I had big boots to fill, basically. And I had a really good time. It was just nice to go on and do something that was different to Barry. It was nice. Really nice.
And, you know, such an iconic man is Bob Crew. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm,
an icon in the gay community.
Yeah.
Here too. And it's, yeah. And well, plus he brings the life to the show. You know, like, I would say most of the laughs that are written are our crew lines.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think one of two of our favorites are, one is, this is the music business, Bobby. These guys don't have mothers.
Yeah. It's just so abrupt, but so like, It's you have to laugh because it's just like, oh, fair, like, okay.
We haven't even asked, how do you feel about doing an American accent?
The dialect, yes.
Do you know what? I actually feel okay because my family have American, as in back in America have American accents. When I hear them talk, I kind of, I'm like, oh, okay. we had, like, it's nice to hear everyone else in the company doing it. But sometimes, yeah, you kind of forget because you're obviously talking with a British accent and then suddenly the show starts and you're like, oh, right, okay, gotta switch. Gotta switch it up. Yeah, I enjoy it. It's nice.
That one and the finger.
Yes, the pinky. In
yes, pinky. Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Just slow look around like, oh. Yeah, no, it's great.
Well, isn't it?
So how were you directed to bring it down and look around? Because I'll be honest, when I saw it again last month, I was like, why is he doing that? Like, is it because he doesn't want people to think that he's acting a little bit more feminine, or was it just like, okay, I'm going to sit down? So I said, how like, symbolically, how were you directed to do that part?
So my pushing was quite quick. It was kind of just like, here's what you do. Here's movement. Here you go. Here you do this. I think for me, I kind of play it like the awkwardness. So it's like he said it, and then it's like, oh, I said that out loud. And now everyone's looking at me. I'm just gonna put my finger down and kind of just move on with the situation. Mm-hmm. But I think some people have played it differently. Some people have played it like, oh, was that too much? Or do you know what I mean? I think everyone has their own interpretation of it. But I kind of go for the subtle awkwardness, like, okay, let's just move on. So yeah.
I love it. And so with the West End Understudies Twitter, that's how we originally saw it. And then it was on Twitter first, then it went to Instagram. How did you feel putting on that costume for the first time? Who sent that picture in to support you? All like that part of the story.
So from my cover on, I got to take a photo in that costume, and I just was like, oh, do you know what? Western Understudies are so great. As soon as someone makes a debut and they've got a photo, they'll post it just to kind of let everyone know what they look like in the costume. And they just messaged me saying, have you got a photo in costume? And I thought, do you know what? Actually, I have. So I'll just send you the photo. I didn't think they'd actually post it. And then they did. And then people were like, oh, great. It looks so, so great on you. And it was, the response was really lovely, actually. And I think that's kind of, I read a lot of the tweets in between, which I wouldn't usually do, actually, but I read in between the shows. And people would sent me messages saying, oh, we saw the matinee today, we're so great. And for me, that kind of, it made me feel, okay, I've done a good enough job. Because I think as an actor, sometimes you, especially as an understudy, and especially being Black, I wasn't sure how that would be perceived from an audience point of view, especially if, like, they know that he was white. Do you know what I mean? It was...
Right.
I was nervous myself as to how it would come across, but I got really nice replies and responses, so it was really nice for me, and I kind of felt, okay, I've done it justice.
Yes, yeah. Well, the rave reviews from what we heard. Yes.
Is there any footage?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm just kidding.
Do you know what? I don't even know. I mean, who knows?
If you find any, please send it to us. We would love to
see it. I would love to see it.
Yeah. So with swing culture before, you mentioned how things are definitely getting better in the UK. But of course, also with in the past year and a half with the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, like really back on, really strong. It really revolutionized the mindset of representation of casting within the theater community. So what are your thoughts on casting in the UK overall? And has anything changed for you in the past year and a half?
Yes, I think, especially with Jersey Boys, and I think a few people don't know this. I think sometimes people see cast announcements, see everyone's headshots, and think that those are the only people that auditioned. But actually, I remember seeing at my audition quite a few Black people who were in for crew, I think cover crew, I'm not sure, other roles, but they just sadly just didn't get the job. Maybe they were already in another, like had another show lined up, maybe the contract wouldn't have worked out, maybe they couldn't sing some of the parts. So people sometimes think that people aren't being auditioned. Mm-hmm. And I can say for Jersey Boys, that isn't the case, because there were quite a few Black people in that I saw in my audition that were in for some of the roles. I think the UK is getting better. It's still not at a level that I think it really should be. I know some shows still haven't had some shows haven't had leads that could be Black or Asian or Chinese or any different race, and there's definitely people out there that can do it. Some of them aren't getting the opportunities that I feel they should do, but I think a lot of it is either producers not fully going for it and believing that they want to make the change first, and then sometimes it's that actors and actresses are booked up. Like, they're already in jobs, they've already got things coming up, and they can't do a year-long contract. So I would say the casting for shows is getting better, and sometimes I see cast lists and I think, finally, things are changing, and then you see other ones and you're like, oh, if only you had have just kind of been brave enough to kind of think, oh, do you know what, this has always been played by someone who's not Black or whatever, but actually we're going to give them a chance, and that's what it is. It's just taking, being brave enough to take the step to think, listen, and it's, when you say it, sometimes it's so stupid, because it's so silly, because it shouldn't matter. But things like Frozen, now we've got the first cover Elsa is Black, and she is incredible. And she deserves that part, so like to be covered, like, and it's great, because it's finally like you go to the theatre and it's nice for children to go and see it and think, oh, look at Elsa, like, and no one says anything about it. Do you know what I mean? So it's not as if it's like, oh, why is Elsa Black? People are on board with it because she's so talented and because she deserves that role. So it's just about taking that leap and kind of just being brave enough to do it.
Love and that. Now the beautiful news on Broadway that Brittany Johnson
Yes, we saw you shared it yesterday too.
Yes, it is
beautiful. Well, I think this is a great place to wrap up. This has been another episode of Silhouettes JV podcast hosted by Gia Doxy and David Benary with our special guest today, Jacob McIntosh, who plays Barry Belson and covers Bob Crew in the West End at the Trafalgar Theater. If you are in the UK, if you are in the West End, if you are in London, go to the Trafalgar Theater and go see Jersey Boys on the West End. We hope to be there in the new year very, very soon.
Ooh, that'd be great.
Guys, follow Jacob McIntosh on Instagram. It's J1993. Follow Jersey Boys UK on Instagram. Follow us, Silhouettes JB Podcast _ on Instagram. Find us wherever you can listen to podcasts. Find us on YouTube. Like, comment, share, subscribe, please. We love you guys so much. And
thank you for keeping us going.
Really, so. Like the bunny on TV with the battery.
Exactly.
And Jacob, a salute to you.
Yes.
My water.
Hey, so do we.
Stay hydrated.